Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Hey, this is Mitch, and I am looking forward to any and all brown ale beers this winter season, and not to mention Christmas ales. They're not for the faint of heart. They're heavy in body and got a lot of spices like cinnamon and such, so if you can't handle that, stay away. But I love them, and they fit the season. You should definitely check them out. And always a good old-fashioned stout. What's better than a big old-bodied stout in the wintertime? Enjoy. Cheers. Frost.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On this week's episode, we talk to the folks from Hopper's Brewery about their winter beers. We have a visit from Yelp.com to tell us about Jewish cuisine right here in Salt Lake City. And then we'll talk about winter films and Oscar bait with our own Jimmy Martin from Slug Magazine. All right, we are here with Donovan Steele, the brewmaster of Hopper's down in Fort Union area. Thank you very much for coming in, Donovan.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Before we delve into kind of the seasonal brew thing, which you're here to talk about, why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you first, you know, just got into brewing as a beer lover and how it became a professional thing for you?
Sure. I started brewing in college, of course, as a lot of people do. I graduated from the U of U and ended up working in brewing supply here locally.
Okay.
And I met Tim Barr, who was the brewmaster at Hopper's at the time, and he hired me in 2003.
Well, so almost 10 years here coming up.
Yeah, pretty close.
What do brewmasters do to celebrate a 10-year anniversary? Anything special, a special batch coming or anything?
Drink a few beers.
All right, perfect. Perfect. Before you got into it, I mean, what were your favorite kind of beers to make when you were just doing it at home as a brewer before you went, you know, big time?
Saisons, Belgian-style beers.
Okay. Well, why don't we get into it? Obviously, it's wintertime. We're sort of seasonal time. What kind of things do you guys do at Hopper's to kind of mark either winter or Christmas in general, any of that?
We start bringing on some of our seasonal beers, of like our faceplant wheat beer and double black lager, pretty much anything that's kind of would be good for like skiers and the ski season.
Yeah, I mean, is it a stereotype that all beer lovers like go for the like dark and hearty stuff in the winter and always the light and pale in the summer? Or?
Absolutely, I think so. A German wheat beer, although a lot of people say it's a summer beer, it's actually really great in the winter.
Yeah.
You know, it's got all the nice spices and banana like flavors to it.
Okay. What kind of things do you see just the customers, you know, really going for in the winter? Does it change dramatically? Does it change what you guys have to do on the back end to supply it?
It changes a lot. We have about 9 different beers on tap. So we have people that come in that like pale ales or wheat beers or just a Mexican lager with a lime. So it changes. It depends.
Okay.
Some people like stouts.
Yeah, that's me. I like stouts, right? But yeah, I was thinking about this today because I love a stout any time of year. A lot of people don't want to do that in the summer. They want a pale ale or something. But do you have a particular favorite of your own at this time of year? Does your taste change as things evolve season to season? Or is it more, this is the new batch or this is a new variety I'm making? Or
I like a lot of the new stuff. You know, anything new is kind of fun. But I do like dark beers. Bock beers are always great this time of year.
Yeah.
But I also like, you know, a lot of pale ales and stuff, hoppy beers.
It does seem, in my experience as a beer drinker, that a lot of people come trotting out a double bock at this time of year. Is that just, like, tradition, or how does it work out that way?
I think so.
Because they're so potent?
It's a good beer to sit next to the fire with and sip.
Yeah. Sip slowly. A lot of people might not necessarily know Hopper's. Can you tell us a little bit about just the place and what you guys bring day-to-day in terms of your beers?
Sure. We're a brew pub. Started in 1996 with Tim Barr as our brewmaster. We've been around. We're a small brew pub, so, you know, we're doing about 2 or 3 batches a year, about 600 barrels a year.
Oh, okay.
And everything is small batch. You know, we don't have a big silo. Everything's brought in by specialty,
Right. Specialty
grains, specialty bags out of Bamberg and England and
wow,
some local grains.
How much of that is, like, your job as the brewmaster to kind of sift through just the straight-up ingredients before it even gets into the...
Everything.
Yeah, right. Everything.
I select the ingredients, the hops, you know, I do the hop contracts, recipe design, modifications in the recipe, all that stuff.
Okay. Do you guys do, go to the Great American Beer Fest or the Idaho Falls Festival, all of that circuit?
Yeah, all the time. Like, we just took a bronze medal for our Pilsner. This is the Pilsner.
Oh, nice.
This last
in
year.
Denver?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Can you talk a little about that you know, how important, or what is the importance of those kind of, I hesitate to call them a contest. They're more a festival to kind of celebrate beer, but there are awards, and it's a good thing to kind of hang your hat on that you won a gold, silver, bronze, whatever. But
yeah, I mean, there were 80-plus something categories and nearly 4,900 beers or something like that entered into the GABF. So yeah, they're pretty big deals.
Is it mostly an excuse for all you brewers just to get together in one place and throw down beer or steal ideas from each other?
Oh, no. I think it's really good for the public to see what kind of beers are being made out there and who's making what.
Do you have any particular, you know, talking about your competition, of course, but other favorite local brews? I mean, you've been living here for a long time. I mean, other beers that you particularly look at locally is like, that's a good beer.
Oh, I like a lot of the Utah beers.
Yeah.
You know, they're all making really good stuff, and any of the Saisons, anything like that, I like quite a bit.
Do you find that the brewers are relatively supportive community with each other? I mean, all you guys, it is, you are still making beer in Utah, which is, of course, not a gigantic industry, but obviously growing all the time, and
we
have great beer all over the place now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of us feel free to be able to call each other up and talk to each other and see if, you know, if we're short on a particular hop or a grain, or, you know, they're more than...
Nice. Have you done much travel yourself, just to go out and, you know, like people go on wine tours the world? Have you gone around the...
Not yet.
you need to get a trip to Germany on the expenses and write that bad boy off. Anything coming up at Hoppers that we should know about in terms of, you know, new beers to keep an eye out or stuff planned for 2013?
Yeah, occasionally we're going to be doing some cask beers on Friday nights. It won't be every Friday night, but, you know, about every other... it's where we take a batch of beer, and it goes through its primary fermentation, and we'll pull that off into a cask and do a re-fermentation in the cask, all sealed up, so it has a nice natural carbonation. So it's got a nice kind of effervescence to it.
Yeah.
And we'll often hop those up differently or add some spices or use a different yeast.
Okay.
And we bring that out, and we serve directly from that English firkin.
Oh, really?
So nice.
Walk it around
nice
the joint.
Beer,
and nice. Do you get a big crowd for those nights?
Not big. Not a whole lot of people know about them, but they're... A lot of people are starting to...
They will now. Yeah. They will now. Yeah, that sounds fun. I like the idea of that. I've had some good cask-conditioned beers over the years, and I didn't have any idea what it was. That's good.
Yeah, we had a good stout with some chocolate and oak.
Oh, nice. Are there trends out there, just in brewing world, kind of in general, that you have just noticed that might be coming down the pipe for Utah brewers that maybe we haven't seen a lot locally that's been happening in other places? Or even just, you know, it seemed like in the last couple of years there's been this explosion of double, triple IPAs or things like that.
I think a lot of, you know, obviously the big beer is quite popular, but I think people are rediscovering sessionable beers, stuff that they can have a lot of without becoming too intoxicated and enjoy it.
That's another aspect I think a lot of people are coming to appreciate in Utah, is that you get these incredibly tasty beers without having to just cover it up with alcohol on there on a lot of things. Is that, I mean, was that a challenge as a guy who was learning back in the day? I mean, is it a challenge to kind of make the Utah strain versus what you might have been making at home?
Oh, yeah. it's quite a trick to get beer in balance here in Utah, and I think we all do a pretty good job.
Have you noticed, it seems that there's other out-of-town breweries or out-of-state breweries who are kind of playing down to the 3-2?
Yeah.
Whatever, 3-2-4-0 level now? I mean, is that because they see a market, or they recognize they can make a good beer that doesn't knock you on your ass necessarily?
I think they want to come in and be competitive with the breweries that are here. And
awesome. Well, Donovan, I really appreciate the time, and thanks so much. And want to remind everybody, Hoppers is located at 890 East Fort Union Boulevard. And is that technically Murray? I used to live right near there, and I can never even tell. Midvale, Murray. Yep. Great spot. And you can go to hoppersbrewpub.com to find out more info and find out what beers are coming up. Donovan Steele, the brewmaster, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Joshua Payne Orchestra is a multi-member jazz ensemble from Salt Lake City that you've seen play in clubs large and small, or maybe even at late-night shows out on the street. Their namesake founder leads the group and has an array of talented musicians playing with them, and at any given time, the band ranges from 3 members to 12 members. The band released their debut full-length album, Zoom, on vinyl in September 2011, and since its release, the band has been playing regular gigs at Bar X and a lot of other places around town. Recently, they released their sophomore album, Ra Ra Ra, in November of 2012. This is a song called Look at Me Now from that second full-length album. This is the Joshua Payne Orchestra. Thank you. more information on the Joshua Payne Orchestra and to maybe buy a little of their music, visit them online at joshuapayneorchestra.com. We are here with Jeffrey Stedman, Mr. Yelp, in my nomenclature, and we are talking about, of all things, Jewish food here in Utah, and it is the Hanukkah season, so we're tying it in, and we're finding everything that there is to find about Jewish food. You explored this a little bit, Jeffrey. Tell us just a little bit about the hunt.
Yeah, again, I feel like with Salt Lake City, you can find things, you know, there may not be 18 of them on your block.
Right.
But, you know, around the city, it's the same way I feel about, like, Korean food. People don't think there's Korean food. There's a ton of Korean food, but it's a little here, a little there. We don't have a ton of everything, but it's definitely here. So, yeah, we went looking for Jewish food or food traditionally associated with Hanukkah. I learned a lot because it's an area I am not super familiar with.
So right. Yeah, well, this will be a fun little exploration. And
Let's explore my ignorance.
You know, a lot of people out there or a lot of restaurants might have dishes that are sort of Jewish dishes, but they're not necessarily known for that with their restaurants, say. So we'll find some of those right now. So why don't we start with what you found is sort of first and foremost here with the Jewish-ish deli?
Yeah, a Jewish deli. I don't use the phrase. I mean, Jewish deli comes with that's a loaded.
It's not a kosher deli. We'll be clear.
Yes, yeah, they have bacon.
That's an official thing.
We're talking about Ninth South Delicatessen, of course, 931 East, 900 South. It's 4 out of 5 stars after 34 reviews on Yelp, and I'm not going to assign them to say Jewish deli because that is such a loaded phrase, and people have such a notion about what that is. It's a deli. And it has several traditional, what we would associate with a Jewish deli sort of items. Monica T, she's an authority on the subject. I'm just calling it right now. So I'll read you what she said. She says, "This isn't quite your grandma and Boca's Jewish deli. It's something that takes a lot of the great stuff from the old school places and freshens it up into something really awesome." Yeah, so they have the pastrami, the Reuben, they have matzo ball soup. They are not on the menu, but they do, I think, from time to time serve knishes.
Yes.
They have strudel, they have latkes. So it's a lot of those things that we would traditionally associate with a Jewish deli. But again, like they have a turkey and bacon sandwich. So
right, right.
Not a kosher deli.
Yeah, see, I mean, to me, this is like, and maybe I'm obviously just confusing Jewish deli with New York deli, but these guys are, their thing is being a New York deli. New York-ish deli.
Yeah.
Like, you have a mean Reuben, you have a mean pastrami sandwich, and they do. I'll vouch for those. I've never had the matzo ball soup, but I would hazard a guess it's pretty good. What else you got going?
Well, I mean, Jewish food. You can't talk about Jewish food without talking about bagels.
Oh, yes.
That's another thing where there aren't a ton of, like, really local bagel shops. So we're going to give a shout-out to Rich's Bagels, which is a local shop. 6191 South Highland is the one location. 3.5 out of 5 after 6 reviews. Adam G says their bagels are denser and less fluffy than your average bagel. Their signature bagel is their Asiago cheese bagel, which I have had in sandwich form and enjoyed.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Bagels seem to be one of those foods in Utah that we kind of are, we're always on the hunt for a really good bagel, you know? Rich's Bagel sounds like the place to be, but it's like, you know, I came from the Midwest. I'm always like, where's the barbecue place? You know, it took a few years for us to start getting some barbecue places going, you know?
Yeah, I don't feel like there's like a consensus like bagel winner. I mean, you ask a bunch of different people. I've heard, I've never had Park City Bagel, obviously, in Park City. I think it's called Park City Bagel and Bakery or Bakery and Bagel or something like that. But yeah, I don't think there's a consensus like
the one.
Get your bagels here. Yeah. Right. I mean, there's a lot of like chain stuff around and you know.
All right.
That is what it is.
Yep. Challah bread.
Challah. Yeah, we'll talk about challah. I've made challah before, and it's not super, super complicated, but to do it right, I mean, you really have to be doing it right. And who does bread better than Crumb Brothers in Utah? They're actually located in Logan, so I'm going to tell you a few places you can find Crumb Brothers stuff. Again, like, if they have challah and the different breads that these different places carry, you're best to call ahead. You can get Crumb Brothers bread at Liberty Heights Fresh, at Caputo's, at Whole Foods, at the store, at Good Earth, all those locations down here. Challah is, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's an enriched bread, typically with, I think, egg and butter. Usually you'll recognize it because it's kind of a shinier bread, and it's braided and topped with.
Right, I always think of the braiding thing, right?
It's braided, the braid. I should have just led with braiding. It's braided.
It's braided challah.
Yeah, it's braided, and you know, again, a traditional, especially for this time of year.
But you're right, yeah, you can't go wrong with Crumb Brothers. Any of their bread is delicious.
Absolutely,
but,
yeah.
All right, what else you find?
Siegfried's Delicatessen. So, I have not had this, but I want to give a shout-out to Mark N. Mark N. is a Yelper, and he mentioned in his review that he noticed they do have borscht. So I didn't know about that. 20 West, 200 South, 4 out of 5 stars after 39 reviews. You can call ahead and say, I don't know if it's on the regular menu or if it's...
Yeah, I wonder if it's a weekly thing. I used to eat lunch there pretty regularly, and I couldn't tell you, but I am not surprised at all that they have borscht. That place has all kinds of old school European and delicious. Delicious.
Yes. moving on to, I think, one of my favorite items, a blintz.
Blintz.
A blintz is sort of like an unleavened crepe, let's call it, right?
Okay.
Sort of like an unleavened pancake, really, really thin. A lot of times they're rolled up with like cheese or those kind of things and then served. So Eggs in the City, 1675 East, 1300 South, they have a cheese blintz on the menu. And Rachel N. shouts it out. She says they come with a nice variety of nanas and berries. I don't think she means grandmothers.
I would like to have breakfast with a few grandmothers in the city. It's a neighborhood joint. They could walk there.
So bananas and berries with your cheese blintz. I'm a huge fan of the blintz. Not fat-free at all.
So yeah, now that you mention it, I've had a blintz. I thought I was having a latke, but it was a blintz that I had because it was very crepe-like and sort of filled with something delicious.
It's a blintz. Right?
And the latke then is sort of a... Like potato pancake type
that's
of thing?
It.
Are they little, like silver dollar size, or does it matter? Is the size a factor, do you know?
I've only ever had, I mean, not silver dollar, but maybe a little bigger.
Okay.
I've only ever had them about to put your fingers together around as big as you can.
Right. They're not cover the
for
plate
your listeners
style
at home
pancakes,
wondering what size yes. I'm holding my hands up. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, latkes again. So that's a potato pancake. So you can go to a 9th South delicatessen. Also, 6th and Pine, which is the restaurant inside of Nordstrom's downtown. They do serve on the appetizer menu. It's a potato latke.
Okay. Excellent. Well, we've covered a lot of Jewish food here.
Surprise, everybody.
I'm trying to think if there's any sort of like little treats we should be giving out to our Jewish friends here at the, I've bought like chocolate menorahs before for people.
You can't go wrong.
Right.
I have a really good friend who is not Jewish, but she used to nanny for a Jewish family in Chicago for a couple of years. And so she really fell in love with all the Hanukkah celebrations and invites us over every year for a Hanukkah party. And it's great. I mean, this time of year, we always talk about the turkeys and the hams and there's a lot to be said for that, but it's happy holidays, baby, and there's a lot of different holidays and let's celebrate the food from everybody. And again, these are not items that are just offered this time of year. I think challah is a little more seasonal, but you can get this stuff all year round.
That's right. And so you can go on Yelp and check it out and find out where the good places are. You can follow them on Twitter at Yelp Utah or hit yelp.com/salt-lake-city.
That's it.
Jeffrey Stedman, thank you so much. We will talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. This is your Sound Waves from the Underground weekly daily calendar for the week starting with December 4th, moving up through December 10th. Lots of things going on despite the fact that this is December and we're straight up into holiday mayhem right and left. Why don't we start with a Christmas show? But it's a cool one. It's a hip-hop show. The Grouch Stole Christmas, one of these annual tours. It's been around 6 years now. It's stopping at In the Venue on Tuesday, December 4th. You get the Grouch. You get his partner, Eli. You get Mr. Fab, a freestyle fiend out of the Bay Area. Always a good time. I've seen this show in the past when it's come through town. It's always fun to have a little holiday-themed hip-hop to deal with. That's on Tuesday. Wednesday, December 5th, a couple of shows on the far ends of the spectrum from each other. You have The Sword at the Urban Lounge, American metal from Austin, a fine band, been around about a decade now. They've actually gone on the road with the likes of Metallica, which is sort of inexplicable, but Metallica knows good young bands when they hear them, I suppose. Know how to get a little street cred on their tours. They are playing at the Urban Lounge on Wednesday, December 5th. Right up the hill from there at Kingsbury Hall, Chris Isaak, who a lot of people look at as sort of a retro soul shtick, a little bit of rockabilly. Actually, a really funny guy who had a great TV show a few years ago. The band that people might remember from that short-lived show on Showtime is playing with them still, and he is doing Sun Records music, a little holiday music, and some of his old originals at Kingsbury Hall. And he's actually a pretty great live show of all things that you might not expect from the likes of Chris Isaak. He's pretty, after all. Thursday, December 6th, Joe McQueen, our local legend from Ogden, a sax man, a jazz legend, a blues player. He's playing at the Garage, his regular residency on the first Thursday of each month. Always worth seeing, and if you've never seen him, make your way to the Garage sometime and check out Joe McQueen. He's like 90 years old. He can blow sax. Talk to Bad Brad Wheeler from the Carousel sometime, and he'll give you the lowdown. This guy showed up in Utah just to play a gig and ended up staying forever and became pretty much our only black musician allowed into a lot of clubs in Salt Lake City for like decades. Pretty amazing story. Also that night, Kinky Friedman, a wild man, a Mark Twain of Texas, a politician, an author, a songwriter. He is an outlaw if there ever was one. Had a band called Kinky Friedman and the Texas Jew Boys. Has written books about growing up Jewish in Texas. He is quite a piece of work, and when he does a live show, it is a rare treat, let alone a rare treat here in Salt Lake City, where we don't get the likes of Texas Jewish people very often. That's on Thursday night, December 6th, at the State Room. On Friday, December 7th, besides picking up a brand new issue of Slug, which is hitting the streets that day, a couple of great shows going down out there. One of my personal favorites, Alejandro Escovedo, a man whose old punk band opened the last Sex Pistols show in San Francisco way back in the 70s. He went on in the 80s to form the True Believers, one of the first roots rock, so-called alt-country bands down in Texas. He's been doing solo things for about 20 years now, an amazing songwriter. The likes of Bruce Springsteen pull him on stage, cover his songs. Him and David Hidalgo, who is the main musical force behind Los Lobos, they are playing together. They used to do punk shows together way back in the 80s when Alejandro and David Hidalgo's bands were first starting out. They're doing a sort of singer-songwriter, playing each other's tunes, tell some stories. That'll be a great night. That is at the State Room on Friday, December 7th. Over across town, the Punch Brothers are playing at the Depot with the Milk Carton Kids. For people unfamiliar with the Punch Brothers, they have one of the meanest mandolin players on the planet, and if you don't think a mandolin can be rocking, you should go see this guy Chris Thiele play. He used to be in a band called Nickel Creek. He moved on and started up the Punch Brothers. He actually just won one of the MacArthur Genius Grants because he is that wicked a musician and a really smart guy and a great guy to follow on Twitter. Really funny. The Punch Brothers, well worth seeing if you like just serious musical chops. That's on Friday, December 7th at the Depot. On Saturday, December 8th, we're going old school at the Complex with NoFX. Fat Mike bringing his band to town for, about the 800th time maybe in Salt Lake City. Always fun. Good to go get your ya-ya's out, get into the pit, sweat off a little bit over at the Complex. They're playing with Teenage Bottle Rocket and Elway. And over back at the Depot, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis are bringing their kind of nouveau brand of hip-hop to town. They're on a hot streak right now. The new album that Macklemore just put out, he has a bit of a pro-gay marriage hip-hop song that has gotten a lot of viral intensity out there. Made these guys a couple of the more popular people going right now. Should be a fun show. That's the Depot on December 6th. And also that night, in case you needed anything else on Saturday, the Devil Whale, local faves, playing at Urban Lounge. Sunday, December 9th, that Joshua Payne Orchestra that you heard a little bit earlier, they're playing their regular gig at Bar X, so go have a, expensive cocktail or a cheap beer and hear some great jazz. That is your weekly daily calendar. As always, go to slugmag.com, check the calendar every day. If you want to submit an event of your own, go ahead and send it in. It's free. You can add some content, some multimedia, some photos, whatnot. $5 a month, $50 for a year, and you can really do it up right. That's your daily weekly calendar. Bada bing! It Foot It Ears is an experimental noise duo from Salt Lake City, comprised of Jason Rabb on guitar and vocals and Nick Foster on drums and dozens of other sound effects and special effects. They released their debut album, Daytype, back in January of 2011 and were featured on Slug's Localized series that very same month. They have a new EP out called Cannonball Lessons, and we're going to play a song called Bite Pete.
Bite Pete, gusto, sidewalk, rodeo, how's about romance, no shirt, hug, overload, roundabout, new Pete starts to shake a little bit, get souped up and shake a little, get souped up and shake a little. Sincerely, would you sincerely?
listen to the full new EP by It Foot, It Ears, purchase a physical copy for $5 and check them out at itfootitears.bandcamp.com. For more information on the band itself, just search for It Foot, It Ears on Facebook. And we are here with Slug Magazine's own Jimmy Martin to talk about all things wintry movies, including our holiday fair that we're delving into right here at the beginning of December and moving out into Oscar bait and, I suppose, Golden Globes and other many award possibilities out there.
1,000 different awards out there, man.
Exactly. So, why don't we just start with the stuff that's going to be coming out here in the month of December that... Obviously, a lot of it is either going to be A, attached to make Christmas dollars, B, it is big-time award movie I guess, blockbuster time.
We've kind of entered into the award season in the sense that, and it's funny because as much as I have seen, there's a lot that I haven't that I'm really excited about, but people are already saying, and I think it just came out, Lincoln came out, and so that's Spielberg's, biopic of the president trying to get the 13th Amendment passed.
Right.
And everybody's just already saying, shit, man, just give Daniel Day-Lewis the Oscar, let's all go home, and so we can go to bed early.
I love that he gets into character even off camera while he makes it, and walking around as Lincoln for 4 months must have been a trip.
I mean, like, there's pictures of him, like, eating breakfast, like, in, like, his, Lincoln beard and, like, jeans. It's just weird.
Right.
But no, it's phenomenal. That movie, it's gonna run away with a lot of things, I think. Which is not to say that other things don't have a chance.
Sure.
Because, I mean, there's still a lot. I was just talking with a friend today, and I said, he was like, it's really slow. Like, there's not a lot of, like, best picture things out there. And I go, and at first I was like, yeah, you're right. And I said, no, wait a minute, we've got The Hobbit. It's coming out.
Right.
I mean, like, The Hobbit's going to screw everything up. And that's your blend between...
Yeah, massive people pick.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's also going to win Oscars, or at least get nominated.
Absolutely.
Because Peter Jackson knows exactly what he's doing with that kind of stuff. Django Unchained.
Still the Cove. Christmas Day, I think.
That's Christmas, yeah.
So that, and right
that's,
in there.
For those who don't know that one, that's Quentin Tarantino's new one about a slave played by Jamie Foxx who gets turned into a bounty hunter with Christoph Waltz. And I've read the screenplay. Let's just say I found it. It fell off a truck on the street.
Right,
and it's so good.
DiCaprio's in there, right?
He's the one. When I was reading the screenplay, like I could see Jamie Foxx easily. The role was written for Christoph Waltz. Like, you could see that easily. But Leonardo DiCaprio is the one character in that film that I was like, really? That's who you casted? I mean, I love Leonardo DiCaprio. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's not the one that I thought. And so it's a role that's gonna change people's view of him because it's a piece of shit.
Right.
Like, he's such an asshole.
Maybe that's what he was going for. Him and Tarantino.
Right. So, and if anybody can, I'd say, reallocate somebody's image of an actor, Tarantino can do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Every movie seems to do it once at least, right?
And he always brings like the one actor that we haven't seen in forever. Like, he did it with John Travolta in Fiction. And this one is Don Johnson, which I think is fantastic as a plantation owner.
Excellent.
So that one looks good.
Does he sing? Can we get Don Johnson on the soundtrack?
Is there a chance of that? Some old time songs. It's so good.
Yeah, that's definitely one on my radar waiting for the end of the year.
Sure. And I see Leonardo DiCaprio, and there is an actor in there that I saw him in the preview the other day who I'm really shocked that he's in there. It's Jonah Hill. What?
Really? Whoa.
But I think I know the character he's playing. He's barely in it. Les Miserables.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a big one. I mean, talk about singing and
just
songs.
Just seeing the preview, and it's like monster size.
Yeah.
It'll be a monster hit.
I hate... What's his name?
Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. And I hate him just because I'm jealous. The dude is jacked out of control. I mean, there's these pictures of him talking about way down the line of the Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's like a Broadway singer. And you're like, shut up, man.
Song and dance, man. What? Are you kidding me?
I think he's got one up on Clooney because I don't know if Clooney can sing. So.
Yeah. That's the next Tarantino movie.
Yeah. So those are a lot. Pretty much of all those.
Is the Great Gatsby one? Or did they bump that out of this year?
He got bumped. That's Baz Luhrmann's. And that, he was going to go for an Oscar run. And then in tradition of Baz Luhrmann, he can never get anything on time. So, they pushed it to, now it's a summer film for 2013. So a lot of those ones I haven't seen yet, really excited to. Some of the ones that I have seen, just kind of speaking on Oscar level, I think Argo is going to make a run for it.
Yeah.
I think if you haven't seen Argo, check that out.
Definitely.
That's Ben Affleck, who, people give Ben Affleck shit all the time. Yeah, okay, he made Geely and he dated Jennifer Lopez, which who the hell wouldn't?
Yeah, right.
And they give him shit for it. And he's had some terrible movies here and there, but directing-wise, the dude rocks.
He's on a streak now, all of a sudden.
Was it Gone Baby Gone was great. The Town was amazing. Yep. Argo, I think, is best.
I absolutely. I saw Argo relatively recently. And I knew, I had a feeling I would like it. I'm into that. Sure. I'm into political history stuff. But he did it. Everything was really well done. Mm-hmm. There weren't any performances where you're like, well, that one didn't ring true or whatever. There's, I mean, it was.
It's
and Affleck's hair is outstanding in that movie.
Yeah. Like, beard, his hair, and then, but and like Alan Arkin as the.
Oh, so great. And him and John Goodman, John they like Goodman. Made it. They were a blast.
Yeah. So. I mean, like, as we're recording this, I get For Your Consideration screeners, and my wife's watching it right now and watching it at home. And she's like, is it good? I'm like, I'm not going to say anything. Just watch it. Yeah. Man. Like, you know,
I told my sister to take her son, who's like a teenage kid. I'm like, it really puts into context what was going on. Yeah. A lot of us don't remember exactly what set this thing off.
And if you weren't alive at the time, it just lays it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything else, looking back, that you think might become Oscar bait? Whether it's, you know, something like The Sessions that came out with a lot of hype, with the, at least for the performances.
I'm glad you brought that one up. That's the kind of the one, I always call it the Little Miss Sunshine Syndrome. Where it's that little...
The one Sundance movie.
Well, you know, exactly. It's the little engine that could. And you're just like, come on, like that. Right. So, but John Hawkes in The Sessions and Helen Hunt, that's a great film. I saw it. It was at Sundance, if you're listening to this. It was called The Surrogate.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they changed
last
the name.
Last winner.
But that one's really good. A lot of people are pushing for Beast of a Southern Wild, which is really good.
Yeah,
it's funny, as much as it was it's the number one movie of the year, and it's totally just a summer blockbuster. I'd love to see the Avengers get the credit where credit was due.
Yeah.
Because that movie, you know, I've watched it, and I'm a huge geek, but just looking at that film, Joss Whedon deserves a directing nomination. The writing is incredible. And it's an ensemble epic that doesn't leave anybody behind. You
right,
know?
It doesn't happen very often,
I mean, if it actually got a nomination, I don't know if it would actually win. I mean, you kind of, I don't know. I mean, it really was a 4-star movie.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see it get credit.
What do you feel about the chance of, like, Skyfall, the new Bond, getting some action?
I would love to see Skyfall getting that. We just saw that a couple weeks ago, and I think it's the best Bond of the entire franchise. You know?
Yeah, and that's saying a lot.
My dad...
Not that there hasn't been some clunkers, but, I mean, it's a real movie with a real director and all that.
A real director and all that. I mean, and it's not... I love Daniel Craig, what he's brought to the franchise. I mean, just his raw boldness, you know. But as much as he can kick the shit out of somebody, he's this handsome dude, you know. Casino Royale was great.
Yeah.
Quantum of Solace kind of sucked. I was not a fan of it.
I think everyone got off the bandwagon there.
It's almost like they took him for granted, you know.
Right.
But Skyfall, God, I would love to see some nominations for Skyfall.
Javier Bardem.
He was, if you want to know who can play a villain,
it's
Heath Ledger.
It's a good Joe, too. Yeah, right.
And speaking of that, you know, I'd love to see Dark Knight Rises get some cred. I think Michael Caine's great in it.
Yeah, do you think that's being kind of, it seems to me in a lot of the kind of end of year hype that I've read, anyway, like that movie's been almost overtaken by the tragedy of the opening night in Colorado, where people just aren't talking about it the same way that they were the last one. And I think it, you know, the last one obviously you did have the Heath Ledger.
Yeah, the Heath Ledger's what pushed that.
And
one.
He was the best thing, I think, in all three of those movies, right?
And that's where, like, you know, I say I want to see Avengers get credit, and everyone's like, it's not going to happen. It's a comic book movie. I'm like, Heath won.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
After he had passed away, he got the Oscar. And you know what? And everybody's like, well, you got it because he died. I'm like, no, he didn't.
Watch
that role again. He 100% deserved it. But yeah, I'd love to see Michael Caine get it. Even just cinematography in that film was great.
Right.
You know? I'm starting to notice that a lot with films this year. Like, Lincoln's cinematography is phenomenal. And a lot of acting ones, too, that, like we said, The Sessions. Hitchcock. That's one I've seen. And Anthony Hopkins is... it's almost a wonder you want to see him take on Daniel Day-Lewis toe-to-toe, you know?
Yeah, right.
Because he's phenomenal as Hitchcock. Hitchcock obviously was one of the greatest directors of all time. Dude was, first of all, an asshole. And a pervert, which is better, you know?
Right.
So, and it kind of took me back to, watching Ed Wood, like Tim Burton's Ed Wood, which is, so good.
Great, yeah.
But Helen Mirren's really good in it. And even going back to Lincoln a little bit on the acting roles, because this is how I've been describing Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, he's the guy who hangs out in a cave for 4 years, comes out, delivers an amazing performance, and then leaves and doesn't come back.
Comes back as another character or something, right?
But Sally Field's really good in it. Tommy Lee Jones could probably win for best supporting. And who else? There's a trio of, it's Tim Blake Nelson. Everybody knows him. I always say it's not Clooney or John Turturro from Oh Brother Where Art Thou.
The other guy.
So Tim Blake Nelson, John Hawkes again from The Sessions.
Who's great and everything I've seen him in. Yeah.
And James Spader. They play these trio of lobbyists that have to go through so much shit.
Spader's the asshole preppy lobbyist of them, right?
I can almost see him.
I love that guy.
So that's really good. The Hobbit, I'm sure, like I said, it's going to get a lot of nominations. There's quite a bit coming out.
Yeah.
Honestly. I'm excited for it, though.
Is there anything that's kind of pushing past the new year that, you know, is going to come out in that sort of dead zone time, but might be actually worth a look. And or just that campy as hell, maybe.
Well, you know, that's fun. I always joke because you say the limit past the new year. Because we have the joke because Sundance goes on during January, obviously.
Yeah.
And so what theaters do, or not theaters, but production companies, they release these films there in Sundance, and we always say it's where films go to die because no one's fucking watching movies in January. The one that they're pushing, I had high hopes for it. It's a Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
Oh.
The one with Jeremy Renner, and I can't remember the girl's name. But like,
oh, and they're burying that into the
January? Yeah,
they
just chucked it into January, if I remember right. So that one's kind of going to go to die somewhere. And then
poor
actually,
Jeremy Renner.
In December, the remake of Red Dawn is coming out.
Oh, God, yeah. And saw the preview for that.
Well, they showed this to us about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Awful.
Really?
It's so bad. Don't see it. Just go watch the Swayze
the original,
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
One.
Not that old. But.
Well, this is a film that sat on the shelf for 2 years.
Right.
And they
Thor's in it.
Well, see, that's what they do. It's such a bullshit move of it sat around for 2 years, and they go, you know, we've got this piece of shit on our hands. What are we supposed to do with this? And they go, there's rumors that he's going to be Thor, so let's hang on to it. And then I can't remember the other kid's name, like Justin Pilecki, I think is his name. He's like, well, he's going to be in Hunger Games, like that.
Oh,
so like,
right.
Well, let's just hold off, and if this really happens, then let's put it out. And everybody go... The general public will think, oh, well, Thor and...
They got
the kid,
together.
If they're good enough for Hunger Games and they did this after it, well, then it's got to be good. It's a bullshit move. They just did it recently with Jennifer Lawrence in she played Katniss in the Hunger Games.
Yeah, yeah.
It was called The House at the End of the Street.
Yeah, sort of a shitty-looking horror movie.
Film. Oh, it's such shit.
Was it even a horror movie or kind of a...
It's actually just a sitting around... this is how boring that film was. You seriously watch a kid make a can of soup for 2 minutes, and then two kids stare at a tree for 3 minutes. I'm like, you have nothing going on in this film.
And you have Jennifer Lawrence in the movie, and who it, I love, yeah. Right? But
well, she's a good
I will not
too.
See that movie.
Don't. My friend Jeff Fies actually said, he goes, they must have had some really good blackmail material on her to make her star in this piece of shit.
I really need a job right now before anything hit. What did you think of her, the one she just made with Bradley Cooper that's gotten a lot of good reviews, so I don't know if they're kind of hyping it up or
it's
not.
It's Silver Linings Playbook, and there's been 2 screenings of it for us critics, and I missed both of them, and I haven't seen it, but from every critic I've talked to, they're really, it's going to go, it's another underdog one.
Right.
They're gonna be pushing it. Because, and I love it, because they've got another actor you haven't seen in a while, and it's Chris Tucker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's not,
haven't seen in a real long while.
Oh, yeah, right? And I was like, oh, sweet, Chris Tucker's back. And they're like, well, it's not that, like, goddamn, Chris Tucker like that. You know, it's just, he goes, he really tries to act. And I'm like, well, that's good.
I want the one from The Fifth Element injected into the story of sort of... mentally, what's the word?
Yeah,
mentally ill, but getting together or something.
Yeah.
I think it's from what I gather.
So that's that one. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else running for it. Oh, I think we said Django Unchained, and that could be just about it. Like, it's December is gonna be crazy.
Yeah. They doing the? They got away from doing 10 Best Picture nominees, right? Now it's gonna be more fluid in between, or is it?
The rule is, if I remember right, because it just started with last year, because the year before was 10 solid, and then what was such bullshit about that is you could look at it and immediately get rid of 4.
Zap, zap, zap. Yeah,
right? I don't know why, because that was the year with, Sandra Bullock and
Incredibly Loud and Annoyingly Close.
No, that was last year.
Oh, that's right.
The year before was, Bright Side? The Blind Side.
Blind Side.
But that was, I mean, you looked at it and you go, that is not a Best Picture.
Yeah,
not a, I don't even know how she won the damn Oscar. So that
pity
was,
vote.
Yeah. The rule now, because that was, we have to pick 10. Now it is, if your film, I think it's either 5 or 10% of the vote of the Academy puts you as their number one film, then you
get a piece.
Then you get in, and it's up to, 10. But, it can go to 10, it can be as low as 5.
Right.
And I think last year there was 8, if I remember right, 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And so last year was actually like the most pissed off I've ever been, because I think Drive was the best film of the year. And
yeah, it didn't get squat.
It got nominated for Best Sound. I was like, fuck off.
Yeah, there were great performances in
that. It's like an insult to do that
one. Yeah, right.
But the reason I bring that up is because you talk about Pity Awards. A film I just watched yesterday, they sent a screener of, and it doesn't come out until, I think Christmas is This Is 40.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Judd
Paul
Apatow.
Paul Rudd.
Yeah, Leslie Mann, Paul Rudd. Kind of a semi-sequel to Knocked Up, but it's actually really funny. Vulgar as hell. And but the one nomination I'd like to see it is Albert Brooks.
Oh.
He plays his dad, who, what do you call it? I think he could get a nomination because he was...
Should have got one in Drive.
He should have gotten Drive, and he should have won it, too.
Yeah.
But so I think they may give it, at least a nomination, probably a Pity Award.
Nice. Excellent.
So, yeah, that's...
Well, it'll be exciting to see when the Oscars all get divvied up, and we will talk again here soon when we head into Sundance Film Fest time here in about a month.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, Jimmy Martin. Everyone, read him every slug.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to Soundways from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. We want to know what your favorite local album is from 2012. We'll be doing a show dedicated to all of our favorites from this year, and we'd like to hear what releases you like the most from this past 12 months. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Leave us something good and we just might play it on the show. This podcast was created, as always, by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. Associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and Dan Nalen. That's me. Executive producer, Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and technical design is by Kate Colgan. Make sure to join us next week on Sound Waves from the Underground when we'll be talking about all ages music venues like the Shred Shed, Blank, and Muse Music. Thanks for listening.